Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Life Coach Cindy Chavez. Today is Wednesday, Neville Day. Happy Neville Day, everybody. Wednesday, January the 15th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time. And wherever you are in the world, thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm really happy, Cindy, because we're 2 days away, Louise and I, from flying to Florida for 10 days. We're going to enjoy weather like you have. This is like the time of year, right?
Right. Yeah, so we were just talking. It's 75 degrees here in Louisiana, where I am anyway, southern Louisiana. And it's just a beautiful day, beautiful sunny skies and nice warm temperature. So you're going to have 10 days of that.
I know. It's going to be great. I almost feel guilty because I'm keeping you in for an hour on a beautiful day. You should be out enjoying that weather. But
well, I was going to say, you know, you're not only going to have 10 days of it, but you're escaping the cold snow and
no kidding
weather that you're supposed to be having where you are now, right? So that's
in
really
a big
great.
Way. I was telling you before the show that the day that we leave, temperatures plummet. This past weekend, we were up in the 60s. We were close to 70, which is really unusual for us this time of year. So, we've had January thaws in the past, but this was like excessive. But the day that we leave, the temperatures plunge. The high for the day is freezing. The low for the day is like around 10 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh.
And the day after we leave, they're getting 3 to 6 inches of snow. So we're definitely leaving at the right time. There's no doubt about that.
I haven't been to that part of Florida in a long time. Maybe, 20 years. But it was funny. The last time I went to that part of Florida, I was there for 10 days. And the day that I got there, checked into this beautiful condo, and it was pouring rain. And I was just like, oh. And then we got everything unpacked, and the rain stopped, and the sun came out. And the rain had caused all the shells to kind of percolate up to the top. So walked down on the beach, collected a bunch of shells, had 10 beautiful days, the best weather ever. Wow. And then the last day, we're trying to decide, do you want to just stay in and pack tonight before we leave tomorrow, or should we go out to dinner? And there was this place that we kept calling because they delivered like the best food. And we said, well, we have all this packing to do. Let's just call and get dinner delivered and we'll stay in and pack. Okay. Second we made that decision, lightning, thunder, and rain started pouring down. So it was raining when we got there, and it was raining when we were packing to leave, and the entire 10 days in between was perfect and beautiful. So
they were definitely waiting for you. I've experienced that kind of thing with weather. So, I mean, we're laughing about it, but you know what? It's a real phenomenon. It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, we put out a book about a year and a half ago. And in that book, one of the stories I told was about how in 1998, Louise and I had just met that year. We were down at my folks' house in Virginia at Smith Mountain Lake, and they had a hurricane that was headed directly at where we were. And I was just, I was almost angry that it was coming there. It's like I was so put off by it that I didn't know anything about law of attraction, didn't know anything about visualizing or anything like that. But I started just imagining, well, by God, we're going to have good weather. I don't know how, but somehow we're going to have great, great weather. The hurricane's going to just stay over there. And you know what it did? It did exactly that for the entire week that we were there. And then when we went home, it followed us up the coast. It was just amazing.
Oh.
It followed us up the coast. And anyone who was living in the Carolinas that year and who got hit by that tornado drenched with rain, my apologies. But hey, you know, my vacation came first. What can I say?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it's nice to have a vacation and the weather cooperate. So
no
that's what
kidding.
We're envisioning for you is a nice long vacation where you can relax and the weather's perfect. Can't wait to hear all about it. When you
and
back.
I'm looking forward to it. I mean, I've been doing a lot of we talk here on the show about how you're not supposed to really work hard. You're supposed to spend most of your time on your visualizing and what it is that you're trying to attract and so forth. But, you know, we do have day jobs and things that
right.
we have to do. And I've been putting in some pretty tough hours on that. And I'm looking forward to just putting all that aside and just spending the entire 10 days on our favorite topic, feeling good, the whole time.
Yes.
Man, I'm loving that.
I mean,
just dreaming about that has been good. I mean, by the time I'm there, my energy is going to be fabulous just because I've been focusing on this day in, day out, you know?
I love that part. You know, that's part that's so important is, and I'm talking about it all the time, and it's like envisioning things and enjoying envisioning them for the sake of enjoying envisioning.
Right.
Right. It's like, exactly. Because that unhooks you from being so attached to an outcome.
Yep.
And you can enjoy it. Why not? I mean, it's enjoyable. So, and then the plus side is that that's what you start experiencing more and more of outside of your visualization too, right? In the real world. So,
well, that's sort of the gravy, but you know what I think is even the better plus side is that when you do that, you're starting to develop a habit of focusing on what you like and breaking that old habit that we all have of spending so much time paying so much attention to all the stuff that we really don't like very much to say, oh, I really don't like that stuff. you need to change that. You need to kind of take control of your own focus, of your own ability to decide what you're doing, what you're going to pay attention to. So there's nothing like actively doing it every day to just build up the new skill.
I told you the game we've been playing around here for the past week or so, and that's just been no matter what happens, we kind of celebrate it.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So it's like, you know, it's like, oh, I just bit my lip. Yes. You know, it's like we get to have whatever kind of response we want. So instead of like, oh, that was awful, we just go, oh, that's terrific. And then everyone, it's funny because we're all doing it now, so we'll all start laughing about it. You know, it's like someone, I don't know, knocks over a glass of water and everyone goes, yay.
Yep.
That's but, good. You know, it really diffuses that energy of angst.
Yes.
That energy of being upset or thinking things are, you know, we make all these plans, and then when things don't go according to plan, and they usually don't, right? They usually don't. I mean, life refuses to be controlled. And so we can allow it, but when we start trying to force it and things don't go as we plan, then we think things are, you know, I'm making air quotes over here, going wrong.
Right.
Right. It's like it wasn't according to my plan, so things went wrong. And so we've just been like celebrating it and pretending like it's just the best thing ever. And it's kind of interesting now that I'm talking about it and I'm thinking back. We've been doing this for like, you know, a week and a half or something. I'm like, wow, there does seem to be a shift in the energy to even better, right?
Oh, yeah.
Even better. So.
Well, it's like the story you've told in the past about how if you start off not knowing how to draw and you're convinced you don't know how to draw, but you just start drawing every day in a book, even though you're drawing these horrible stick figures that are just terrible. If you keep doing it every day after a year, you're going to know how to draw.
Right.
You know, so the same thing is going to apply here. If it doesn't matter whether or not you're really enjoying it. The point is to keep just trying to enjoy it every single day. And if you do it every day, you finally get to the point you're really enjoying it.
Right. That's it. And I think that when you have those responses, it moves you in the direction towards a better experience.
Yes.
And if you keep responding that way, and, you know, mostly I'm just talking about little things. It's the, you know, that idea that it's not the climb up the mountain, it's the pebble in your shoe that, you know, ruins the journey. It's like the little irritations in life, the little things that get us frustrated. If we can practice having a better response to those things, because it really doesn't matter. The whole thing's going to be over in 2 minutes, you know, max, regardless of whether I say hooray or, oh, shoot, right? It's like, if we can kind of practice the better response, the happier response, then we start veering towards the direction of things going right more often.
By the way, I had that experience during my walk today, and I thoroughly recommend if you do have the experience with the pebble in your shoe, take the pebble out of your shoe.
Yes, please do.
It's a very good idea to do that.
Well, we have talked about this the book that we're reading with you, Neville Goddard's Seed Time and Harvest, and the chapter today seems sort of short, and we kind of talked about it. Do we think we can get through two chapters? We don't know. It might be a cliffhanger. We're just going to start out.
Cliffhangers
where we
are good. You know, cliffhangers keep people back for the next episode, so that's okay.
Right. Yeah. So do we have announcements before we dive in?
Yes, we do. First and foremost, because of this trip that Louise and I are taking, starting Friday, there won't be any shows for a 10-day period. We'll pick them up again on Tuesday. That's January the 29th, I believe. So obviously the next show I do with you after this will be Wednesday, January 30th. But by all means, keep replaying the old shows. I mean, that's why you have a whole list of them there.
Right.
Go back and play them all while we're away, and we'll be back soon enough. And I know this is an important message to put out there, Cindy, because just in the last few days, listenership is way, way up. So, I mean, I want these people to keep listening. So, you know, just in your feed alone, you've got at least 50 episodes in there. If you can't find something there, I mean, you just aren't talking about
it. Well, and if you're here today because you love Neville, there's plenty of Neville. We've been doing Neville over a year. So,
yes.
You know, and the way I always talk about not just Neville books, but lots of books. Like I have certain books, especially books on these kind of topics that I have read 2, 3, 4, 5 times.
Right.
And I've been reading Neville for, oh my gosh, I've been reading Neville, I can tell you, since 2005.
Wow.
And every time I read Neville, if it's a book I haven't read in a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, it's completely different to me. And so re-listening, you know, it may be the same for you, is that things that stood out to you the first time around will be completely different the next time.
Happy 15th Neville anniversary is all I think.
Right? Wow. I hadn't thought about that for a long time, but there were certain things going on in my life at that time. So mm-hmm. I can go back and, you know, how you connect certain memories and I know that that was when I discovered Neville. So, wow.
Cool.
I hadn't even thought about it. It's been a long time.
Yeah, that's very, very cool. Also, want to remind people who are not yet subscribing, this may be the first show you ever heard. And if it is, welcome. We're glad to have you. Or maybe you've been kind of lurking but haven't taken the plunge. Take the plunge. Subscribing is free. It doesn't cost you anything. It's so easy to do. If you don't know how to do it, just go to the homepage of our website. That's the easiest direction for somebody who's kind of a newbie to all this stuff. The website homepage is at loatoday.net. And right at the top, you'll have some really easy instructions to do it in about 2 or 3 clicks. And then everything's coming right to your smartphone or your computer or whatever you're using. And then also feel free to check us out on YouTube, because we live stream these to YouTube and you can actually see what we look like. You can see Cindy's beautiful face as we're doing these shows. Aww. And it's so simple to subscribe there too. I mean, anybody who's ever used YouTube, I think pretty much most people know how to subscribe now. Because you can't miss the subscribe button. It's like this big honking subscribe button. But there's also a little bell. You want to make sure you click that bell too, because that way you get notified every single time that we're publishing something on YouTube. So subscribe both ways and take advantage of the fact that we created this show. I created this show. My wife and I did originally, mainly to help ourselves, but also to help other people get into that positive frame of mind that's so important for attracting what we want into our lives. And that's what we aim to do. We aim to help lift ourselves up and lift our listeners up just by providing content that it feels good, which is really different from what you get from most of the media outlets. I mean, let's be honest. Most media outlets are trying to push your hot buttons as much as they possibly can. We don't push hot buttons. We push happy buttons, which is kind of a different thing.
Right. And if for some reason we do hit a hot button, then just pay attention, because
that's
we
true.
All go through life, right, and get a little triggered about something, or we have some of our buttons pushed. And those are just areas, that's your next area of personal growth.
That's a very good point.
That thing you're struggling with, that thing you want to avoid, that thing that, you know, makes you feel an emotional charge, that's your next area of personal growth.
It really is. And it's true. It's true. We actually, most of the mail we get is just overwhelmingly positive and supportive.
Yes.
But we did get a message late last week, somebody had written in about a show that I did with Linda Armstrong, who I do the shows on Fridays with, and Linda had said something, I don't remember exactly what Linda said, they didn't really reference it carefully, but the person who signed the email, he signed it Sad Listener, because in that particular show, Linda said something to the effect about kids attracting stuff into their lives. And this person works with kids from dysfunctional families who suffer all kinds of horrors in their lives. And she was really taking exception to that. And I can understand that.
Yeah.
I did write back and I gave her some alternative ways to think about it. But your point is dead on for her, because I'm sure she was at a point, and I don't know what that point is exactly, but just the fact that she felt compelled to write in about that, first of all, shows that she had a little bit of confusion perhaps about how all this stuff works. But secondly, she's at a crisis point of some kind in her own life. And this is something she really needed to focus on. So, you know, right on for you for bringing up, that's something she needed to focus on.
Yeah. We sometimes think about it coming from the outside. Well, you say, well, that guy really pushes my buttons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they're my buttons.
Yes, that's true. Isn't that annoying?
Yes, it is absolutely annoying. Yes. All right. Well, we've been traveling through the Neville books, and this one in particular, we've joked about it, that when we first started doing Neville, Walt and I are both honest about the aversion we had towards anything that sounded religious or Christian. And I have to say, there were some moments back in those days when we started doing Neville, when it was like I was having some kind of out of body experience to be like on the podcast, live radio, actually, we were doing live radio, right? And I'm right. reading verses from the Christian Bible. And I'm like, what is happening to me? Why am I doing this?
You're a practitioner of Judaism, which makes it really, really ironic. So, right? I mean, just.
So what was funny, though, is that we began by picking the Neville books that had the very least amount of any kind yes. of religious references. And we worked our way. And then we got to where we had read every Neville book but two. And they were the heavy hitters as far as quoting from the Bible. And so we said, okay, let's just do it. So that's where we're at now. But I will say for people that might not know this already, with Neville is that when he quotes scripture, Walt started calling it the Neville decoder ring because there are certain things that Neville says. And then when he defines them, you realize, oh, that is not like what I learned, you know, in any of my religious training, right. upbringing, Sunday school, whatever experiences you had growing
exactly.
up or learning. Yeah. So when Neville talks about Christ or the Lord or God, he often will turn around and say, and by that I mean your imagination. So that's a big twist there to think Neville is not saying that it's some, you know, greater power outside of you. He's saying this power is within you. The power to create is within your own imagination. So I say that so we recognize that whatever you thought these verses meant in the past, Neville's probably going to disagree and say they mean something else, and that's okay.
It is. Well, calling it a twist is actually being generous because, I mean, anyone who went through catechism would be practically, you know, in a faint over what Neville right. was saying.
Right. And so we just, you know, hey, this is, you may have heard me say before, I don't really have any beliefs. I like to say that I'm willing to entertain possibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we do with Neville. We're just like, let's just have an open mind and read what he has to say. We just want to know what he has to say. And so,
and we've learned a lot out of it. Let's be honest. Yeah. We've gotten a whole lot of really good stuff that we found. First of all, we have discovered he really does dovetail very nicely with other Law of Attraction teachers, even though he never uses the term Law of Attraction.
True.
He uses, I think the closest term he uses is Law of Assumption, if I remember correctly.
Yes. Yes.
And yet everything he talks about, I mean, you can practically do an overlap between him and Abraham Hicks.
Sometimes it's very close, yes.
It's really something. So, yeah.
So that's the thing I think is important is that, you know, we realized right off the bat when we started getting into these books where there were a lot of quoting of the Christian Bible and the Jewish Bible, you know, religious texts, that some people on the one hand might be completely turned off because they're not religious, don't want to be religious, don't have religious practice, could care less about these verses in that frame. Right. And then other people may be very offended because they are very religious. And here's this guy taking all of their sacred teachings and, you know, just twisting them around and throwing them, you know, a curveball.
It's funny to hear you say that because I thought that on numerous occasions, that dichotomy right there. On the one hand, people like you and me who are kind of turned off by anything religious. On the other hand, people who are very religious who are turned off because he's not fairly treating their religion the way they think.
Right.
I mean, it could go either way.
Right. And so I realized, ooh, talk about triggering people or pushing a lot of hot buttons. I'm like, we may be pushing buttons all over the place. You know, some people are upset because you're desecrating my beliefs and other people are upset because I want to do Law of Attraction. Why are you teaching? Why did I turn on the podcast today and you're quoting from like the book of Matthew? What is going on? Right. So our take on it is, you know what? We know that Neville was a master at creating, a master conscious creator, and we just want to hear what he has to say. And there's no need to think you have to believe a certain thing or, you know, commit yourself to any kind of belief at all. It's just, let's hear what he has to say. So,
and the really good news is that we must be doing something right, because since we first started doing the books, the average listenership per episode is more than doubled. So we're doing something right. I don't know what exactly, but we're doing something right.
And we do get listeners that will send us an email or a contact form and say, thank you for Neville Day. I love it so much. So, yeah, so that's great.
Speaking of which, somebody commented on one of the YouTube videos, and I forgot to share it with you, but they commented that they liked the show that we did and that we should just ignore those Facebook people because they don't know what they're talking about, the people in the Neville groups. So apparently we're reaching some of the people who are like-minded. How about that?
That's funny. Yeah, you know, I don't think – I never take any anybody's teachings as being set in stone. I just say I'm willing to entertain the possibility that it's interesting. You know?
It is.
So this particular chapter of Seed, Time, and Harvest, chapter 6, is called Time, Times, and a Half. And we're actually quoting from what the Christians refer to as the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. It's just the Jewish Bible as well, from the book of Daniel. It says, "And one said to the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, which was upon the waters of the river, when he held up his right hand and his left hand unto heaven, and swear by him that liveth forever, that it shall be for a time, times, and a half." That's the quote we start with. And
Neville set himself a task for this one, I have to say.
Well, I love what happens next, because Neville says at one of my lectures, given in Los Angeles on the subject of the hidden meaning behind the stories of the Bible, someone asked me to interpret the above quotation from the book of Daniel. After I confessed I did not know the meaning of that particular passage, a lady in the audience said to herself, "If the mind behaves according to the assumption with which it starts, then I will find the true answer to that question and tell it to Neville." And this is what she told me. So I want to stop there for a second and just say, I was sort of impressed that Neville confessed he didn't know the meaning of it.
Yes.
Because Neville had carried a lot of, you know, weight as a teacher. His teachings carried a lot of weight.
Yes.
And I always think, you know, that's the way I want to be. When someone asks me a question I don't know, I want to just be willing to say, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I feel like I did that this week. Somebody asked me something. I said, that's a good question. Instead of just like pretending or making something up, right? Which Neville's not doing. He didn't know. And he said he didn't know. So this woman says, well, I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to tell him.
I think it's terrific. I mean, it shows, first of all, he was a human being. He was just as, you know, he made mistakes like we did. He didn't have all the answers and so forth. He was sharing what he knew. But he was acknowledging, you know, there are limits to my knowledge. I just don't know everything.
There are some
followers of Neville who I think ought to reread that because they tend to deify him a little bit.
And this
is the kind of way to bring it back down, you know?
Exactly. And what's funny is another one is, I think it was last week's chapter, just this past chapter, I believe, where Neville said something like, okay, now that we've cleared up that it's a lot easier just to talk about this stuff than to actually do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right, so the quote, and this is what the woman told him, so I don't know if this was a letter or if they spoke, but it says, last night the question was asked, what is the meaning of time, times, and a half, as recorded in Daniel 12:7. Before going to sleep last night, I said to myself, now there is a simple answer to this question, so I will assume that I know it. And while I'm sleeping, my greater self will find the answer and reveal it to my lesser self in dream or vision. So I want to stop because I have to comment on this. I got excited when I read this. just yesterday, I said to a client who was working on figuring something out, I said, let me tell you what I do just before you go to sleep tonight, because our brain works just as hard while we're sleeping, if not harder than it does during the day when we're awake. Right before you go to sleep, just tell your brain, okay, I have an assignment for you. This is what I'm working on. When I wake up, I want to have the answer to this. I do this a lot, and it works for me. And that's what this sounds like. She said, before I go to sleep, I said to myself.
Yeah.
The answer in a dream or a vision. I often just say, when I wake up in the morning, I want to know the answer to this.
That's pretty much it, yeah. Or the other thing I'll say is, I've been doing that a lot with the programming work I've been doing. I'll run up against you know, something that I just don't understand. I can't figure out, you know, how do you get around this thing that's very important. I have to get this thing fixed. And by the time the day is done, I'm wiped out. I'm exhausted. And so I just put out there like, look, I need a solution for this. Just give me a solution. I don't care how you do it. Just give me a solution. I wake up the next morning. I go back to it. And about 10 minutes later, there it is.
Excellent. See, I love this. The other thing is that you can remind yourself when you're working on something and you just can't figure out the answer, just remind yourself, remind your brain, there's a simple solution to this.
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of times we make everything so complex because we can't figure it out, so it seems complicated.
Right.
And yet we give our brain the task, we wake up in the morning and we go, oh, that's it, right?
What's simple cool, solution. Too, is when we do this kind of behavior, I mean, you mentioned that you've been doing this a lot. I've been doing it a lot, too. So I'm sure you can confirm what I'm about to say. When you do it a lot, it gets easier.
Yeah.
It gets really, really easy when you've been doing it for a while to the point where you don't even put any energy into it. You just kind of put out there, okay, I need a solution, and you're done.
Right.
There's no reaffirming it or anything like that. You just put it out there, you're done, and you go to sleep.
Right. That's the other part is that now we know I've been struggling, well, not lately, but a year or so ago, I was really struggling with insomnia.
Yes.
And, you know, I know that some people have problems with insomnia because of what we call like the hamster wheel, right?
It's
like they lay down and start worrying about things or thinking about things. That really wasn't what was happening with me, but I have had that experience where I've been concerned about something that's kept me awake. When you practice what you're talking about and I'm talking about, giving your brain the assignment to figure it out, it's like, I just want to wake up knowing what to do. When you get used to doing that, it actually will help you with that problem of worrying and thinking the same thoughts over and over and over and struggling with something while and keeping you awake because you're like, I've said to my brain, I'm not going to stay awake and worry about this. You figure it out. Just let me know tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go to sleep.
Yeah. All right. I'm with you on that. In fact, what I found, I mean, there are two ways you can actually try to go about doing this. One would be, I would call counterproductive or perhaps the hard way. And the other way is the easy way. The hard way is where you give yourself the instruction and then you stay awake fretting about it.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
Yeah. The easy way is where you just let go. You say, okay, I don't know the answer to this. I give up. I quit. Fix it for me. Just fix it. I'm done. I'm going to bed. Let me know when you got it. And then you go to bed with the idea, okay, I've let go of it. So I can go to sleep now, which I do. In fact, that's a great way to go to sleep, I find. It's, you know, if I'm experiencing insomnia for some reason, for me, that's one of my best things to do. Okay, I got some problem going on. Somebody out there solve it because I can't do it. I got to go to sleep. And then I go to sleep.
I love that she said, while I'm sleeping, my greater self will find the answer and reveal it to my lesser self. So she says, around 5 a.m. I awakened. It was too early to rise, so remaining in bed, I quickly fell into that half-dreamy state between waking and sleeping. And while in that state, a picture came into my mind of an old lady. She was sitting in a rocking chair and rocking back and forth, and then a voice, which sounded like your voice.
No.
Yep, which sounded like your voice, said to me, "Do it over and over and over again until it takes on the tone of reality." I'm sure she'd heard Neville say that probably more than once.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I jumped out of bed and reread the 12th chapter of Daniel. And this is the intuitive answer I received, taking the 6th and 7th verses, for they constituted last night's question. I felt that if the garments with which biblical characters are clothed correspond to their level of consciousness as you teach, then linen must represent a very high level of consciousness indeed.
Ooh.
For the man clothed in linen was standing upon the waters of the river. And if, as you teach, water symbolizes a high level of psychological truth, then the individual who could walk upon it must truly represent an exalted state of consciousness. I therefore felt that what he had to say must indeed be very significant. Now, the question asked of him was, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And his answer was, a time, times, and a half. Remembering my vision of the old lady rocking back and forth, and your voice telling me to, quote, do it over and over and over again until it takes on the tones of reality, and remembering that this vision and your instruction came to me in response to my assumption that I knew the answer, I intuitively felt that the question asked the man clothed in linen meant, how long shall it be until the wonderful dreams that I am dreaming become a reality? And his answer is, do it over and over and over again until it takes on the tones of reality. A time means to perform the imaginary action, which implies the fulfillment of the wish. Times mean to repeat the imaginary action over and over again. And a half means the moment of falling asleep while performing the imaginary action. For such a moment usually arrives before the predetermined action is completed and therefore can be said to be a half or part of a time.
Wow.
That's really interesting, because isn't that true that when you're doing this where you're imagining like the vignette over and over, that you just fall asleep somewhere in there? It's not like, oh, I finished it now and now I'll go to sleep. In my experience anyway, when I have just run this vignette, this little scene that I'm imagining that I want to create, when I just start running it over and over in my mind, I don't know where I fall asleep.
Somewhere. Oh, yeah, it blurs very quickly. Yeah. Yes, yeah. No doubt about that.
Did you have any thoughts come up in our reading so far?
The only thought that I've had come up is this man clothed in linen upon the waters of the river. That's the kind of thing that I could hear a Christian minister or preacher saying, well, that's an early vision of Jesus.
Oh.
And, you know, so I'll use Jesus as...
Now my minister wouldn't be saying that.
Well, okay. Mine would have.
I'm teasing.
But I can imagine... Right. I mean, Neville certainly wouldn't have said anything like that. This definitely is not the way Neville uses the concept of Christ, but I can see a Christian minister doing that. And so therefore, we can kind of generally say that this man clothed in linen is somebody who is an advanced person, somebody who is a master at maintaining high vibration, maintaining that high level of consciousness and so forth. So the question that comes to my mind is, why is it that somebody who has such a high level of consciousness has such a hard time explaining clearly what the heck he means? That's the thought that keeps going through my mind. Forever it shall be for a time, times and a half. You know, how unclear can you possibly be?
Well,
so I'm wondering, what's the purpose behind that? There's got to be something going on there.
Right. What it reminds me of is something that I've been studying for what seems like forever, but when you study alchemy, there are lots of riddles. Nothing's clear. And often some of the texts will tell you, if you're reading it, it isn't what you think it is. And there were a lot of pictures drawn, and they all contain some kind of mystery. And I think that it kind of goes along the same lines of what we hear about poetry, that there's a connection between poetic thought and genius. And I think it's because it bypasses the logic of our logical mind, who's always trying to figure everything out, in the same way that, I mean, you know, I read tarot cards. There's an image. The image affects a different part of our brain than just a string of words.
Mm-hmm.
And it can kind of bypass that logical brain that's always trying to, you know, figure everything out. And usually that's trying to convince us of something. So it reminds me of the same thing. It's something that's more poetic. It's something that's verbalized in a way that seems a bit mysterious. And I think that's why.
Okay. Well, I may be a little bit sensitized to this because, like I said, I'm doing a lot of programming. And when you program, you very often tie into the various kinds of open source software that are out there. And when you go to get help with certain issues that pop up when you're dealing with these open source softwares, very often each open source software will be like its own little kingdom. So you'll go to Forum X about Software X, and you'll ask them, well, how does Software X integrate to Software Y?
They don't. Very closed ecosystems. Yeah.
Yeah, they'll say, oh, no, this is about Software X. You want to ask about Software Y, you have to go over to the Software Y forum.
Who tells you the same thing?
There's a, exactly. and so there's a piece of me that's saying, don't you guys ever talk to each other? I mean, the rest of us are trying to program, put these things together so that we get actual working packages. You don't seem to be doing that.
Right. Good point.
Maybe I'm a little sensitized.
Maybe. All right. Let's see. I don't want to skip anything. Okay. So she's talking about the time, times and a half, and that the half was falling asleep in the middle of your repetitious of times. To get such inner understanding of the scriptures by the simple assumption that she did know the answer. And that's an interesting thing to talk about, right? She said, she made the assumption that she knew the answer.
Yeah.
So by doing that, what she was kind of programming in there is that it wouldn't be anything new to her. It would be something she already knew. And this was something she already knew.
Yeah. And it's a daring statement to make. Because in the rational world, that's something you really don't want to say, because, you know, then all of a sudden you can't come up with it and you're held accountable and all that kind of stuff. You know, so there's a whole fear thing that's associated with it. But she put the fear aside and said, you know what? I know this answer. I may not be able to bring it to my conscious mind right now, but I know this answer. I'm just going to believe that.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, actually.
It is.
So Neville says, to get such inner understanding of the scriptures by the simple assumption that she did know the answer was a wonderful experience for this woman. However, to know the true meaning of time, times, and a half, she must apply her understanding in her daily life. We're never at a loss in an opportunity to test this understanding either for ourselves or for another. A number of years ago, a widow living in the same apartment house as we came to see me about her cat. The cat was her constant companion and dear to her heart. He was, however, 8 years old, very ill, and in great pain. He'd not eaten for days and would not move from under the bed. Two veterinarians had seen the cat and advised the woman that the cat could not be cured and that he should be put to sleep immediately. I suggested that night, before retiring, she create in her imagination some action that would indicate the cat was its former healthy self. I advised her to do it over and over again until it took on the tones of reality. This she promised to do. However, either from lack of faith in my advice or from lack of faith in her own ability to carry out the imaginary action, she asked her niece to spend the night with her. The request was made so that if the cat were not well by morning, the niece could take it to the veterinarians and she, the owner, would not have to face such a dreaded task herself. That night, she settled herself in an easy chair and began to imagine the cat was romping beside her, scratching at the furniture, and doing many things that she would not normally have allowed. Each time she found that her mind had wandered from its predetermined task to see a normal, healthy, frisky cat, she brought her attention back to the room and started her imaginary action over again. This she did over and over again, until finally, in a feeling of relief, she dropped off to sleep, still seated in her chair. At about 4 o'clock in the morning, she was awakened by the cry of her cat. He was standing by her chair. After attracting her attention, he led her to the kitchen where he begged for food. She fixed him a little warm milk, which he quickly drank. He cried for more. The cat lived comfortably for 5 more years, when without pain or illness, he died naturally in his sleep. And then Neville quotes, "How long shall it be to the end of these wonders? A time, times, and a half. In a dream, in a vision of the night, when deep sleep falls upon men, in slumberings upon the bed, then he opens the ears of men and seals their instructions."
By the way, that last bit is from Job, so we don't want people to think that it's actually from the same story in Daniel, but nevertheless, it ties it together really nicely.
From the book of Job, chapter 33.
But interesting. I find the most fascinating part about that is he didn't actually try to define a time, times, and a half. He let the woman do it, and then he said, you know, well, it's good to actually play these things out in our lives, so he told a story about somebody who basically helped to extend the life of a cat, not knowing how long it was going to be. It could be just overnight, but it turned out to be 5 years after that. And that's what a time, times, and a half meant in that case. So,
well, he explained what she did. She imagined the cat being frisky. When her mind wandered, she pulled it back and she imagined it over and over.
Yep.
And then she fell asleep in the middle of doing it. So that's the time, the times, and the half. And then the cat lived 5 more years.
So where do you see the time, the times, and the half in that story?
Well, because the woman explained what it meant. The time was like the vignette.
Okay.
So imagining the vignette once was the time.
Okay.
The times was doing it over and over and over.
Ah, okay.
And the half was that we usually fall asleep halfway through one of the repetitions.
So basically she was mirroring what the previous woman had said you have to do, what this whole thing actually means.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Was, all right. That makes sense. Some sense.
Yeah. I think it's kind of funny that Neville used that particular story, but I like the story. And another thing that stands out to me about that particular one is that, you know, we've had a few stories where the person said, look, this was like, I was desperate and I didn't really know if it would work and I didn't really believe in this stuff and I just decided to try it anyway because what could it hurt?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, she said, you know, the vet had said it was time to put the cat to sleep.
Right, right. Yeah.
And she didn't want to do it. So she said she didn't know if this was going to work or not, but if it didn't work, she didn't want to have to take the cat. So she asked her niece to stay overnight so mm-hmm. she could take the cat. So
which
it's like,
probably was, it was a good move, actually, because apparently she was able to release her own resistance enough to do the task just by doing that.
Probably so, yeah. And that's what I think is interesting about it is for those of us who sometimes feel like it's not working because we don't believe, you know, hard enough. It's like we don't have enough faith or whatever. These people didn't have that. We've
That's
read
true.
Several stories of people that wrote to Neville that said, yeah, I didn't think this was going to work, but I thought I'd try it anyway. As a matter of fact, there was one person that we read the story about that was trying to prove that it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm fascinated because I was wondering about the title of this book. The book's title is Seed Time and Harvest. And mm-hmm. it actually has a sort of a subtitle or a I'm not sure what you call it, but it's Seed Time and Harvest, A Mystical View of the Scriptures. Mm-hmm. It was published in 1956. And I kept thinking about that phrase, seed time and harvest, because seed time, that's where you plant your seeds. Harvest is where you reap what's grown out of it.
Right.
This is the first stories that I can remember. I was actually flicking through the earlier pages to see if
there's something. Oh, where we're talking about time?
Where we're also talking about planting seeds, because that's literally what this whole thing about time, times and a half was doing. It was
right.
planting seeds, using going to sleep as a way to plant the seeds, and then something came out of it the next day. So I'm wondering, has the rest of the book been doing that and I overlooked it? I don't know.
I don't know. It's a good question.
I don't know the
it's
answer.
Interesting, though, we've talked about this many times with Neville, and that is the people that will write in and say, 2 weeks later or 3 weeks later or the next day, it's generally a short period of time mm-hmm. between the seed time and the harvest.
Yes. Especially with Neville. Neville, it's like 2 to 3 weeks every time. Except
that's what I'm saying. Every time. It's like 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, which gives me a great deal of encouragement.
In this case, it was overnight. It was during the night. I mean, this was the same day. She goes to sleep, wakes up at 4 o'clock and her cat wants milk. I mean, that's pretty quick.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you can't really ask for it to be faster than that.
No, it was immediately healed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious if we have any comments or questions going on with our live listeners.
That's a very good question. I unfortunately forgot to log into that computer. So I'll see if I can do that right now. And I'm not seeing anything immediately.
Okay.
So I'd say, why don't we just continue? Why don't we go on to, we'll not finish it because obviously there's not enough time to finish it, but why don't we start chapter 7 and then we'll
start it.
We'll finish it when I get back from vacation.
Yay. So chapter 7 is called Be Ye Wise as Serpents. Be ye therefore wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Matthew 10:16. Neville says the serpent's ability to form its skin by ossifying a portion of itself and its skill in shedding each skin as it outgrew it caused man to regard the reptile as a symbol of the power of endless growth and self-reproduction. Man is told, therefore, to be wise as the serpent and learn how to shed his skin, his environment, which is his solidified self. Man must learn how to loose him and let him go, how to put off the old man, how to die to the old and yet know, like the serpent, that he shall not surely die. Man has not learned as yet that all that is outside his physical body is also a part of himself, that his world and all the conditions of his life are but the outpicturing of his state of consciousness. When he knows this truth, he will stop the futile struggle of self-contention and, like the serpent, let the old go and grow a new environment. Then he quotes Tagore, "Man is immortal, therefore he must die endlessly, for life is a creative idea. It can only find itself in changing forms." In ancient times, serpents were also associated with the guardianship of treasure or wealth. The injunction to be wise as serpents is the advice to man to awaken the power of his subtilized body, his imagination, that he, like the serpent, may grow and outgrow, die and yet not die. For from such deaths and resurrections alone, shedding the old and putting on the new, shall come fulfillment of his dreams and the finding of his treasures. As the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made, Genesis 3:1, even so, imagination is more subtle than any creature of the heavens which the Lord God had created. Imagination is the creature that, he quotes from Romans, was made subject to vanity, not willingly, but by reason of him who hath subjected the same in hope. For we are saved by hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For what a man seeth, why does he yet hope for it? But if we hope for that we see not, then do we have patience, wait for it. Although the outer or natural man of the senses is interlocked with his environment, the inner or spiritual man of imagination is not thus interlocked. If the interlocking were complete, the charge to be wise as serpents would be in vain. Were we completely interlocked with our environment, we could not withdraw our attention from the evidence of the senses and feel ourselves into the situation of our fulfilled desire in hope that the unseen state would solidify as our new environment. But there is a natural body and there is a spiritual body, he quotes from 1 Corinthians. The spiritual body of imagination is not interlocked with man's environment. The spiritual body can withdraw from the outer man of sense and environment and imagine itself to be what it wants to be. And if it remains faithful to the vision, imagination will build for man a new environment in which to live. This is what is meant by the statement, "I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there ye may be also," from John 14. The place that is prepared for you need not be a place in space. It can be health, wealth, companionship, anything that you desire in this world. Now, how is the place prepared? You must first construct as lifelike a representation as possible of what you would see and hear and do if you were physically present and physically moving about in that place, and place has quotation marks around it. Then, with your physical body immobilized, you must imagine that you are actually in that place and are seeing and hearing and doing all that you would see and hear and do if you were there physically. This you must do over and over again until it takes on the tones of reality. When it feels natural, the place has been prepared as the new environment for your outer or physical self. Now you may open your physical eyes and return to your former state. The place is prepared. And where you have been in imagination, there you shall be in the body also. That's what you've been doing.
A lot of that, yeah. And I'm fascinated, too, by his use of the word subtle, or the subtilized body, I think he called it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Subtilized body. An interesting way to describe the word imagination, because certainly imagination is not something that most people, at least outside of LOA conscious creation circles, that most people give a whole lot of value to. They don't give it a lot of emphasis, like imagination is so important. You may find some people who are entrepreneurial who find that their imagination is important, or perhaps people who create fictional stories or movies or whatever their imagination is supported. But beyond that kind of thing, you know, imagination doesn't get a whole lot of credit. But
well, it's also interesting because sometimes we hear the term subtle body as like the energy body,
mm-hmm.
like the chakras, or, you know, in certain systems, mm-hmm. the energy body is referred to as the subtle body. And Neville's saying that the subtle body is our imagination. So, right, that is interesting.
It's basically it's a very subtle way of saying this stuff's important. This imagination stuff is really, really important. I mean, he did a whole book that had the word imagination in it, so he obviously thought
right.
it was important. But
yes.
But he's kind of reemphasizing that here, that this imagination thing, that's really what drives the whole ball of wax.
Well, and I love this next statement because it's something that we should remember. Because he says, the place is prepared, and where you have been in imagination, there you shall be in the body also. And then he says, how this imagined state is realized physically is not the concern of you, the natural or outer man.
Mm.
That's the part that trips us up, is we
yeah.
think we have to figure out how.
Yep.
He says, the spiritual body on its return from the imagined state to its former physical state created an invisible bridge of incident to link the two states. Although the curious feeling that you are actually there and that the state was real is gone as soon as you open your eyes upon the old familiar environment, nevertheless, you are haunted with the sense of a double identity, with the knowledge that there is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. When you, the natural man, have had this experience, you will automatically cross the bridge of events which leads to the physical realization of your invisibly prepared place.
Yeah. This is interesting. This is good
mm-hmm.
stuff. And I'm trying to put my finger on exactly what's resonating with me here, because I'm getting a big sense of resonance here. But it's something, it has to do with this idea that everything, both inside us and outside of us, is essentially an extension of us. And that's
right.
kind of what he's talking about here. When he describes that curious feeling that you were actually there and that the state was real, that feeling is now gone. Anybody who's tried to be a conscious creator knows what that's like. You're working, you finally get yourself into that imaginative state where you can really you can practically taste it. It's so real. And then you kind of wake up and all of a sudden it's gone and you're back in the real world. And what I've found has happened over time is that this is something that's been especially true in the last week or so. I've been playing with bodily pain. I know that's a weird thing to play with. That's a strange thing to say, but I've been playing with bodily pain, partly because, and I've acknowledged this on a couple of past podcasts, I've told that story from about a year and a half ago over and over and over again about how I hurt my knee and then how mm-hmm. I used my attention to heal the knee in a really short period of time.
Right.
And as a result of telling that story over and over again, I've had a lot more opportunities to feel pain in my knee lately.
So it's
been more opportunities to practice bringing my attention back over to where I want the knee to feel. And so I've almost been experiencing an oscillation going on. Feel the pain, no pain. Feel the pain, no pain. Literally that quickly. Back
yeah.
and forth. Where am I putting my attention right now? That's what I'm feeling. And that's what I'm trying to get to. He's describing how it can feel like, oh my God, it's an entirely different thing, and that's true. But you eventually get to the point where you have that oscillation going on so quickly that the boundary starts to blur.
Right. He talks about a bridge.
That's what the bridge is, exactly.
The bridge.
That's
right.
The bridge. And that bridge he calls it a bridge, I call it a blurring, but that is where it gets really interesting. Because it can get to the point where you have a hard time telling them apart.
Right,
you have a pain state and a non-pain state, and you have a hard time telling them apart. That's a really weird place to be in.
Right?
And that's what he's talking about here.
But that's that idea that it's just a whole sensation.
Yes.
And we label it. This is good. This is bad.
Yep.
This feels good. This feels bad. Right? And it's just all sensation. And so that is where the bridge starts to happen.
Mm-hmm.
He says this concept that man is dual and the inner man of imagination can dwell in future states and return to the present moment with a bridge of events to link the two clashes violently with the widely accepted view about the human personality and the cause and nature of phenomena. Such a concept demands a revolution in current ideas about the human personality and about space, time, and matter. the concept that man, consciously or unconsciously, determines the conditions of life by imagining himself into these mental states leads to the conclusion that this supposedly solid world is a construction of mind, a concept which at first common sense rejects. Mm-hmm. However, we should remember that most of the concepts which common sense at first rejected, man was afterward forced to accept. These never-ending reversals of judgment which experience has forced upon man led Professor Whitehead to write, "Heaven knows what seeming nonsense may not tomorrow be demonstrated truth."
I got to make a reference to the non-conscious creation LOA world into the more mundane world. Because yesterday, Louise has been watching a lot of documentaries. She's gotten into Amazon Prime lately, when there's a ton of documentaries there. And one of them was on Elon Musk, who is the creator of Tesla. He was one of the creators of PayPal and so forth. And one of the comments one of the concepts, I guess, that came out of that was that Musk with his electric car, with the Tesla, was basically disproving an old belief, a belief that had been around in the car industry for a long time, which is that you will never be able to build a car that is a purely 100% electric car that can compete with an internal combustion engine car. Mm-hmm. And not only has he produced one that can compete, I mean, I didn't realize this. Those cars are now priced at $35,000. That's the same thing as what, you know, Ford and Chrysler and Toyota and Nissan are pricing their cars at. I mean, it's the same price range. He actually did it. And mm-hmm. he did it in a way that most people didn't even realize. I didn't realize it. You know, I thought they were on the same price range as like Jaguars or something like that. No, he actually got them down into the same price range as your typical family car.
Right.
Like, whoa. So there's an example exactly what Neville's talking about how, or actually what Professor Whitehead is talking about. Heaven knows what seeming nonsense may not tomorrow be demonstrated truth. Well, Elon Musk just demonstrated the truth.
Exactly. It reminds me too of I can never think of his name, but the first person that ran the 4-minute mile.
Oh, Roger Bannister. Yes.
Right. Because everyone said it couldn't be done. It couldn't be done. Couldn't be done. Then someone did it. And after someone did it, people started doing it all over the place.
All over the place. I think it was broken 8 times in the next week.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, that's that rejecting something because it's just a common belief.
Exactly. Yeah. So how cool to know that that's still going on, though, and that it continues to go on, that all these truisms and things that we held to be absolutes are falling by the wayside as new imaginations come in and new creations come in.
And not just things that were thought of as it can never happen and now it does, but the judgments people make. Like, you know, it's so funny calling something witchcraft or something, you know, mm-hmm. magic, and right. now it's just science, right?
Yes,
it's
right.
Like, right? It's like herbal medicine or something. Mm-hmm. It's like all of a sudden, oh, now we can break it down and we can see the actual compounds of these chemicals and why they affect the brain the way they do and the body the way they do. And, oh, suddenly it's not mysterious anymore. So it's, you know, oh, okay, well, we can believe that.
Yep, it's true.
So many things.
We only have a couple minutes left, so I'm going to tie in one more story from stuff that Louise and I have been watching on these various documentaries, if I can remember the details well enough. And of course it's just leaving my mind, so I guess we'll have to not do that one, but it just bled right away. But before we go, I do want to make sure that I remind people how to reach out to Sydney Chavez, the life coach, because she is a tremendous talent. She's the one who's leading us through all this stuff. And Cindy, I mean, I've learned so much through all of the great insights and knowledge that you brought to the table in terms of understanding what Neville is all about. I mean, you mentioned that I came up with the idea of the decoder ring, but you're the one who explained the decoder ring to me. So thank you for that. Appreciate
that. Well, you can find me at my website, and there's a contact form there, cindychavez.com, CindieChavez. But also, you know, you can follow me on Facebook or find me on Twitter or Instagram, or I'm all over the place. Same name, Cindy Chavez. And I would love for you to give me a shout out, give me a follow, whatever, you know, connect with me somehow.
It's a lot of fun when we do hear from people too. So, I mean, you make our day. It's what I'm saying. When
yes,
you contact
really
us, you
nice.
Make our day. It's really good. So I will be missing not doing it for another 2 weeks, doing Neville Day, but we'll do it again. We'll pick it up again in 2 weeks. So have a nice, great time there in Louisiana. I hope the weather continues to be marvelous for you.
Well, you have a nice time in Florida. My goodness. I hope you have a wonderful trip.
I'm sure we will. I mean, my sister-in-law has laid out a whole schedule of things for us to do. Plus, we're going to go visit my cousin, Becky, who's in the Tampa area. And we're going to see our nephew, Josh, who's on the other side of Orlando in the Winter Park area. So, I mean, it's going to be a great time. It's going to be wonderful. Really, really good. So lots of good stuff happening. So thank you very much, Cindy. We really appreciate all your efforts. Thank you to our podcast listeners as well. And we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.